Washington. This is Daybreak Asia. Good morning. I'm Jim Stevenson. Coming up, Pakistan Taliban claims responsibility for assault on Karachi airport. Vietnam wants bigger U.S. role in dispute with China. A Chinese web publisher avoids the Great Firewall with some help. These stories and more on this Tuesday edition of VOA's Daybreak Asia. The Pakistani Taliban is claiming responsibility for Sunday night's deadly assault on the country's largest international airport in Karachi that left at least 28 people dead, including 10 terrorists and more than a dozen security personnel. Ayaz Gul has more from Islamabad.
Authorities say that just before midnight, a group of around 10 heavily armed militants, some wearing military uniforms, infiltrated an old terminal at Karachi's busy Jinnah International Airport. Suspected Taliban insurgents carrying automatic weapons, hand grenades and rocket launchers shot their way into the facility, which is used mainly for cargo and executive flights. The audacious coordinated assault triggered an intense five-hour gun battle with security forces guarding the terminal that extended into Monday morning. Flights to Karachi were diverted to other airports as troops joined elite commandos in trying to counter the assault. An eyewitness who lives nearby spoke with Reuters. He says loud sounds were coming from the direction of the airport. He and his family saw small fires erupting around the hangars, and the firing was so intense it looked like war had broken out between India and Pakistan. The head of the provincial paramilitary force called Rangers told reporters in Karachi that three militants wearing suicide vests blew themselves up while the rest were killed by security forces. Major General Rizwan Akhtar added that bodies of the terrorists and documents seized from the scene are being examined to determine their identity. The general says an initial probe suggested the attackers were foreigners, probably fugitive citizens belonging to the Central Asian Republic of Uzbekistan. Analysts describe the Uzbek militants as an integral part of the Pakistani Taliban, entrenched in Pakistan's Waziristan tribal territory on the Afghan border. The Tehreek-e-Taliban Pakistan, an alliance of militant groups waging a bloody insurgency against the state, later claimed responsibility. A spokesman for the outlawed extremist organization says it was conducted in response to recent military strikes against their strongholds along the Afghan border. Provincial health authorities say the violence wounded more than two dozen people, some seriously. They added that no passengers suffered casualties and planes at the terminal were unharmed. Critics say the airport attack has dealt a critical blow to Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif's efforts to negotiate a peace settlement with the Pakistani Taliban. The floundering peace process is already under fire from civil society and progressive groups. Former Pakistani Air Vice Marshal Shahid Latif says a dialogue with a group that is working only to destabilize the country will lead the government nowhere.
So the government has realized that this is a futile effort. Perhaps they know, but they still remain engaged in the process of dialogue. It suffers from indecision. It has other priorities without realizing that unless there is peace and law and order situation in the country is under control, the economy is not going anywhere.
Pakistani Taliban militants have previously carried out deadly attacks against airports around the country, including military and naval air bases. However, Sunday night's assault is being described as the biggest in terms of human losses. Meanwhile, authorities in southwestern Balochistan province say that the death toll in Sunday's multiple suicide bombings in a remote town bordering Iran has risen to at least 26. The victims were pilgrims belonging to the minority Shiite Muslim community and had just returned from Iran when four suicide bombers attacked their hotels in the town of Taftan. Authorities suspect a Sunni Muslim militant group also aligned with the Pakistani Taliban. Ayaz Gul for VOA News, Islamabad.
Hundreds of passengers were trapped for a time inside the passenger lounge at Karachi's Jinnah International Airport. Daybreak Asia's Idris Ali and Ira Melman spoke with one of those passengers. Kamal Faridi is a businessman who was waiting to board a flight to Dubai when he heard a number of gunshots. He said passengers quickly tried to find places to hide, including under chairs and tables.
There are more than 300 to 400 people at the time the first gunshot here, and they all are spread to different rooms, and time to time they were evacuated by different group of commandos. They evacuate them from the scene, from the launch, and means they are evacuated timely manner, so it takes more than 3 to 4 hours to evacuate all the passengers from the launch.
Did you feel in danger at any time?
No, because the commandos are prepared for anything. They are like a wall in front of us. They are 3 to 4 tiers of wall, security wall in front of us. So we have ASF commandos, then we have army commandos, and they all are making sure that there is not a single person get hurt at the launch.
Did you see any fire coming from the area?
No. No, not at the passenger lounge.
No. Even when you were driving home, no fire?
Yeah. When we are getting off from the airport, yes, we hear heavy gunshot, heavy gun firing. I don't know if it's from the both end or from one end, but it's going on very heavily.
What was the atmosphere like in the lounge? Was there talk between the passengers? Was there talk between the security personnel and the passengers? What was the atmosphere?
No, there were no talk between any of that. We were just silent, and we were just hearing the gunshots. Just commandos came 3 times and said, "We are evacuating you. Just get set. Get ready all of your stuff and everything. Make sure that you didn't left anything." So there were 3 attempts to evacuate us.
Tell me what you first thought when you heard what was going on.
It's like when we heard the first shot, it's like something going on, some fireworks at the nearby wedding hall or something. But all of a sudden it goes heavily, so we thought that there is something serious. And all of a sudden, the commandos came, and everything is become a chaos. So that's the point when we know there is something wrong.
Are you terribly surprised by what has happened here? There has been quite a bit of violence in the city over the past few years. Are you very surprised about what happened?
Yes, we were very surprised. We were shocked. We were in feel of a. Insecurity while this attack happened, but all of a sudden when we saw security personnel and commandos came taking our security in their hand, then we feel secure.
Kamal Faridi, one of the passengers waiting to board a flight at Karachi International Airport when gunfire broke out Sunday. He was speaking with Daybreak Asia's Idris Ali and Ira Melman. In an effort to capture more foreign currency from tourists, North Korea will launch temporary flights from Shanghai to Pyongyang next month. The U.S.-based tour operator Yuri Tours says it will run a new 4-day tour to North Korea with charter flights beginning July 6th. According to the company's website, North Korea's Air Koryo will provide the charter service. The tour will include stops in Pyongyang, the historic city of Kaesong, and a visit to the demilitarized zone separating North and South Korea. Some analysts have told VOA that North Korean leader Kim Jong-un is hoping to revive his country's sagging economy with tourism. Currently, Air Koryo offers scheduled passenger service from Pyongyang to Beijing and from Pyongyang to the northeastern Chinese city of Shenyang. India's new government has unveiled its own roadmap to lift that country out of economic stagnation. Anjana Pasricha has more from New Delhi on how the new government is promising broad economic reforms and more investor-friendly policies.
In an address to newly elected lawmakers, President Pranab Mukherjee said Monday that putting the economy back on track is paramount. He said the country is passing through an extremely difficult phase as growth has dipped below 5% for 2 consecutive years and inflation is unacceptably high.
We will work together to usher our economy into a high growth path, rein in inflation, reignite investment cycles, accelerate job creation, and restore the confidence of the domestic as well as international community in our economy.
The President's address sets out the policy agenda of Prime Minister Narendra Modi. It was made at Parliament's first session since the Bharatiya Janata Party government took office last month. The government promised to provide basic amenities such as healthcare, housing, water and toilets, saying it is turning the focus from poverty alleviation to poverty elimination. It also set out an ambitious agenda to modernize India by building smart cities and world-class industrial zones. The BJP-led government wants to transform India into a globally competitive manufacturing hub in order to create more jobs for millions of young people. To achieve that, President Mukherjee says the government will remove hurdles that have discouraged investors from a country that until 3 years ago was regarded as one of the world's rising economic stars.
My government will create a policy environment which is predictable, transparent, and fair. It will embark on rationalization and simplification of the tax regime to make it non-adversarial and conducive to investment, enterprise and growth.
Mr. Modi's sweeping victory is attributed to his campaign pledge to lift India out of economic stagnation. The government is also promising to engage energetically with neighboring countries, including China, and says it will bring renewed vigor to relations with the United States. India will also strive for progress in ties with Japan. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
Still to come on Daybreak Asia, gender barriers are bridged in Pakistan's young gaming industry. Vietnam is hoping the United States will play a bigger role in settling territorial disputes with China, but Washington is refusing to take a stand on the location of a Chinese oil rig that Vietnam says is in its territorial waters. VOA State Department correspondent Scott Stearns has the story.
Vietnam says this video shows China's Coast Guard ramming a Vietnamese fishing vessel last month near a Chinese oil rig in disputed South China Sea waters. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Hong Lei says that's not what happened.
In the relevant seas, China's ships were on the defensive and Vietnam's ships were on the offensive.
Vietnam says it wants the Obama administration to do more to help stop Beijing. Vietnamese Foreign Ministry spokesman Le Hai Binh.
We would like the U.S. to continue to have a stronger voice, as well as more practical and constructive actions to contribute to the peace, stability, security, and safety of seas in the region and to solve regional disputes by international law.
But Washington says it will not take a stand on Hanoi's claim the oil rig is in Vietnamese waters. U.S. State Department spokeswoman Jen Psaki.
We encourage the sides to maintain dialogue with each other, but we're not going to weigh in on speculation about their location and what it means.
American Enterprise Institute analyst Michael Oslin says that puts the Obama administration at a disadvantage.
When the administration goes so far as to say that it's not going to determine whether or not these waters are in the common definition of the exclusive economic zone of Vietnam, you've taken a very great step towards abdicating any input that you can have into this situation.
Oslin says that will be seen by China and U.S. allies as a clear sign Washington will use any excuse to not get involved.
At least you can lay the groundwork and say, yes, this is clearly in Vietnamese waters. We still believe it's up to Vietnam and China to solve, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't accept what is pretty much a reality and something that we ourselves observe in every other waters and all the way around the world.
American University professor Hilary Mann Leverett says it's undermining the so-called U.S. pivot of military and diplomatic resources to Asia.
That's what China wants to show to Vietnam. You are under the biggest stress that you've been under, and the one country that can come and help you out isn't going to do it. You need to make amends with China. That's, I think, very much part of the strategy and why we will continue to see more.
China's foreign ministry says it wants good relations with Vietnam, but says there are principles that China cannot abandon in the face of what it calls Vietnam's provocative actions. Scott Stearns, VOA News at the State Department.
Scott's story also has some great video. If you have internet access, you can see it at voanews.com and add /daybreakasia to stop by our program page while you're there. The U.S. military is trying to minimize information leaking out on the recovery of Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl, even as details of his captivity at the hands of the Taliban are going public. VOA's Jeff Selden reports it's part of an ongoing effort to shield Bergdahl from the media spotlight.
It has now been more than a week since Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl was handed over to U.S. Special Forces and taken out of Afghanistan. But Pentagon spokesman Colonel Steve Warren says Bergdahl, recovering now at Landstuhl Regional Medical Center in Germany, has yet to have the long-awaited phone call with his parents.
This decision to speak with the family is a decision that the returnee has to make when he or she is emotionally in the right place to make this phone call.
Media reports say the 28-year-old Bergdahl has started to open up to the team directing his care, telling of being caged after trying to escape and of other harsh treatment. And while he's been treated for skin and gum ailments, Pentagon officials say Bergdahl's in stable condition, improving every day. Though Colonel Warren says the military's in no rush to send him back to the United States.
The phase two reintegration process simply takes as long as it takes. Every phase two reintegration is different. There is no set timeline.
Interest in Bergdahl's case has intensified since the deal securing his release was announced 10 days ago, with several soldiers from his platoon accusing Bergdahl of deserting. Lawmakers have also been critical, saying U.S. President Barack Obama paid too high a price, releasing five high-risk Taliban leaders in exchange for Bergdahl's freedom. U.S. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel is set to testify before lawmakers about the deal Wednesday. Jeff Selden, VOA News, The Pentagon.
Chinese authorities have increased online censorship in the past few weeks, a sensitive time that coincided with the 25th anniversary of the Tiananmen crackdown. VOA spoke with the editor behind PowPow.net. It's a Chinese language news website whose entire content is hosted on Amazon's web services and encrypted in a way that makes it difficult for Chinese censors to block access to it. VOA spoke with the editor behind PowPow.net, who asked that his name not be used.
I think right before the June 4th anniversary, I contacted our IT partner back in Beijing, the greatfile.com people, and they have informed me that so far nothing has happened to PowPow. But right afterwards, I saw PowPow's mirror site, which is hosted on Amazon Cloud, has been very unstable. And we haven't been able to confirm if it's a consequence of the June 4th anniversary or something else.
Can you tell me the editorial direction of PowPow and how did you manage to keep it functioning within China as well?
The editorial direction of PowPow is trying to make it a platform that could inform the Chinese netizen of the online security and the internet development situation in China and around the world. Because of the technology, which is dubbed as collateral freedom, that we are using, we can do uncensored news. We can do honest reporting about these issues. PowPow used this technology, which we hosted on the international cloud services, that the Chinese government don't dare to take down because of the vast amount of economic interest invested in them. So we could see how far this technology can go.
We see and we keep seeing many companies coming into China with the hope of increasing their business. So do you think that there's a trend towards maybe self-censorship?
Yeah, I think from the international companies right now, they are in a dilemma. They are sort of hitting a difficult spot because if they want to continue or start doing business in China, they basically have to comply with the Chinese government's request, which basically means they have to block or take down information that Chinese government think too sensitive for the Chinese public. And on the other hand, you see Chinese company Chinese internet companies like Weibo and WeChat, they have been actively complying with the Chinese government's request, taking down accounts, keeping the records of their users. A lot of Chinese tech companies are happy that foreign companies like Google and Microsoft are backing out of China. So it's a joint effort by the government and these companies to push them out so they could provide market for domestic companies.
You mentioned the fact that Amazon might decide to increase its business in China. How do you think that could affect Baopao?
So far, it's unforeseen. It's our sincere hope that Amazon will be an ethical company that will try to keep the internet free and neutral, of course, and so every voice can be expressed on their services. If they do receive pressure to block Baopao and websites like that, we are also prepared for that, and we are expanding to other cloud services as well.
Editor of PowPow.net, a Chinese language news website whose entire content is hosted on Amazon's web services and encrypted in a way that makes it difficult for Chinese censors to block access to it. In a country where women's rights are often ignored, Pakistan's young gaming industry is breaking gender barriers. Sharon Bain talks to two startup companies where young men and women work side by side to reap some of the benefits of the billion-dollar international industry.
A top-earning mobile phone game can gross more than $3 million a day. Young Pakistani entrepreneurs like Baba Ahmed are hoping to cash in on the money-making trend, while also bringing men and women together in the workplace. An unlikely scenario in conservative Pakistan that Ahmed says is crucial for creative development.
Each person that works on a product adds something of themselves, brings something to the product. And from that angle, diversification is phenomenally important. It really increases the scope and perspective of what you're bringing to the market.
At Pakistani gaming company We Are Play, which both services games and creates them, a younger, educated urban generation is breaking all the norms when it comes to work. Quality assurance technician Maria Khan says We Are Play's young CEO, Mohsin Afzal, treats women as equals.
Because you would see a lot of girls here. And you would see a lot of boys, there are a lot of boys that are working under the girls. And that is because he doesn't see what gender are you from, what age are you from, how much prior experience do you have. As long as you are committed to the work, he would hire you on that thing.
But while the industry has managed to break some barriers at home, it has been harder to penetrate the international business side of gaming.
If I come in and say, we're a Pakistani-based company, absolutely, you lost me at hello. I come and say, hi, I'm a Stanford graduate who has a successful game from here and there. They're listening. I don't even talk about where the company is based. And then when you position it as a company that is low cost, based in Asia, all of a sudden they're like, oh, this is pretty good.
Luckily for both companies, which have produced internationally popular games, the consumer doesn't care where the games come from. They just want to have fun. Sharon Bain, VOA News, Lahore.
Miss Universe Thailand Willuri Phai Ditsiabut has relinquished her title following remarks she made on social media calling for the execution of red shirt supporters of ousted Prime Minister Yingluck Shinawat and her brother, exiled former leader Thaksin Shinawat. Willuri posted the remarks to Facebook months before being crowned last month, but they emerged only recently and that sparked online outrage. A tearful Willuri told reporters in Bangkok Monday she was stepping down because she could not handle the harsh comments directed at her on Facebook and Twitter, many of which also criticized her appearance. The anti-red shirt posts were made before the army staged a coup last month to remove the country's caretaker government. Organizers of Miss Universe Thailand say they may not promote the first runner-up known as Ellie. Their reason? Pictures of her kissing a man, which have surfaced on the internet. We've posted a few things of our own. It's called The Latest World News, and you can hear the stories next with Steve Norman and International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson. Thanks for joining us today on Daybreak Asia.
For listeners in China, there's a new Chinese language iPhone application from VOA. Simply go to the iTunes App Store and type VOA space Chinese and then look for VOA News Chinese Edition.